This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Here's to you, 2022. We are continuing our series looking at the year ahead, and today we start with politics. Big election year in Massachusetts. Legislative races, governor's race, also re-election bids in all nine of the state's U.S. House seats. Now listen, we know you are probably not ready to think about an election that is 10 months away. We get that. But we are, and we want to let you know what we'll be watching for you and what issues could emerge this year to be pretty important to you. So what is lurking in the background this year in the world of politics that could matter for you? We ask you to join the conversation, and here's how we'll ask it of you. What is the biggest political question for Massachusetts in 2022? Tell us what you think. 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or tweet us. We are at Radio Boston. Two guests joining us now. Lisa Kaczynski is a Politico reporter, author of the Massachusetts Playbook, and Gary Daffin, executive director of the Multicultural AIDS Coalition and the co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Lisa, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Gary, welcome back to you too.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to ask you guys the same question. Lisa, I'll start with you. What do you think is the single biggest political question in the Commonwealth for this coming year?
Well, at the moment, it's whether Maura Healey's running for governor or not. But I think in general, you know, it's a wide open governor's race. I mean, this is going to be the story for this year. And then apparently the lieutenant governor's race right along with it, because the field seems to be growing by the day for that one.
So why is that such a big question, Lisa?
Well, open seats are rare, especially for the highest office in the state, and especially for the fact that Democrats, even in this blue state, haven't always held the governor's office. You know, we've had a lot of Republican governors, particularly over the past three decades or so, you know, Deval Patrick being really the only break in that. And this is the clearest shot that they have had in this whole stretch, you know, since Deval Patrick and going back, you know, through Bill Weld and the others to reclaim this office. And the question is Maura Healey going to get in? Signs are certainly looking like it. Of course, we said that about Governor Charlie Baker until he decided not to seek a third term. But this is a big moment for Democrats, both the governor's office and down the ballot, just trying to kind of push the progressive envelope across the state and kind of seeing how far they can go with it.
Gary Daffin, do you agree? Is Maura Healey's decision on the governor's race the biggest question for politics in Massachusetts this year, or at least for now?
I do. I think a corollary is, will Massachusetts finally elect a woman as chief executive? And will that be Maura Healey? There are several women who are in the race or will get into the race. But there's a couple of cautionary tales out there for Attorney General Healey. One, we've never elected a woman as governor, and there's been several women, Evelyn Murphy, Shannon O'Brien, Martha Coakley, all ran and didn't quite make it. But particularly for attorneys general who've run for governor of Massachusetts, and particularly Democrats, there's kind of a graveyard of candidates, Scott Harshbarger, Tom Riley, and Martha Coakley. So even though it may look like all is clear, sometimes when things look too easy, they might be too easy.
So I want to stay with this for a second, Gary and Lisa. In fact, on the Democratic side, now that former State Senator Ben Downing withdrew from the governor's race, on the Democratic side, two women declared candidates, Sonia Chang Diaz and, why is her name out of my head? Diane, somebody help me.
Danielle Allen.
Thank you. I'm flailing on live radio. Danielle Allen. I don't know why Professor Allen's name just wouldn't come to my head. And, you know, speculation about Maura Healey. I wonder, would it be really groundbreaking if only women were running on one side of this ticket, Lisa?
Yeah, I think it would be. And it's actually something that, you know, kind of funnily enough, Eric Lesser, when he announced for LG this morning, kind of, you know, hinted at, you know, he's ready to support the next governor, whoever she may be. That wasn't his exact wording. But yeah, I mean, you saw this was a big year for women, you know, kind of breaking barriers across Massachusetts. And yes, there is quite the glass ceiling, you know, up and down the ballot for that, you know, as we just discussed. But I mean, Boston having essentially two female mayors this year, and North Adams having its first female mayor. And you're just seeing stuff like that across the Commonwealth. So it's really setting the stage for something, you know, maybe even bigger. Maybe this is finally the year.
And Gary Daffen, if it is, what does it signal about the state, or what could it mean policy-wise down the path for the Commonwealth? I mean, so let's get back to people's everyday lives. What changes?
You know, I think that depends on which woman is elected, or which woman is elected. There is a big debate, not a debate, but a discussion or lots of frustration within the Democratic Party about how progressive the party really wants to be. And so, yes, we saw a progressive movement in Boston in a poorly attended election, really. And what looks like a sort of a realignment politically in Boston. But the question is whether that is really where the state is in general, and whether the large group of unenrolled voters will be more centrist than some of the progressives would like the state to move towards. So I think it's really a question as to where the debate within the Democratic Party moves, particularly as we have all of the chaos in Washington and the lack of movement, and people are just really frustrated about that. So I think it depends on whether we have someone who's more progressive and pushes that agenda, or someone who's going to be a little bit more moderate. I think that will also influence who, in fact, gets into the race.
So let's stay there for a second. And I do want to put this question out to listeners out there. You, do you think this is a year where you will see struggle for the soul of the political parties in Massachusetts? Is there the same kind of fight going on the Republican and Democratic side as at the national level, or are we unique or distinct in your mind in some way? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. To answer that question or join this conversation, and what do you think about that, Lisa Kaczynski?
All right, well, let's start with, I don't know, the Republicans. Definitely, this is a year where at least it was shaping up to be a battle for the soul of the Republican Party. Let's start with that. I mean, we were potentially headed for, you know, a conservative Trump-backed Jeff Deal primary against a moderate Republican governor. Now that, you know, Baker's not running, you still have the conservative Trump-backed candidate, you know, kind of standing alone on the Republican side right now. And a lot of more moderate Baker-aligned people in the Republican Party still searching for another candidate to kind of step up and be their standard bearer. So that's kind of an ongoing thing with the Republicans. And on the Democratic side, the three candidates who are, the two candidates who are in the race right now, and then, you know, Ben Downing, who recently exited, and Maura Healey, are all various shades of progressive. But, you know, that's not always necessarily where the state is. Yes, this is a blue state, but Democratic primaries, you know, were one thing, and the general election is another. And remember, this is a state that keeps electing kind of these more moderate Republican governors. 57%, I think, right now, of voters are independent, or unenrolled, I guess I should say. So it's very interesting. There seems to be a lot of appetite for progressive politics, more progressive politics among the Democratic electorate based on the past few cycles that we've seen here. But this will be a big test of that, you know, again, especially without a really big name Republican candidate in the race right now.
And Gary Daffen, whoever does win for governor, who enters and wins, will have to win across the entire state. And it is a diverse state. We tend to think of Massachusetts as very Democratic, and certainly our state legislature is. But, you know, more than a million voters voted for Donald Trump in 2016. There are a lot of regional variations. We are economically diverse, racially and ethnically diverse. So is a statewide election a place to play out the struggle for the soul of a party, or is that just impractical in 2022?
Well, I don't think that the statewide races in Massachusetts are necessarily solely about the soul of the Democratic Party. I think this year the Republicans looks like they're pretty much going to self-destruct and not really gain much traction with the voters overall. So there is going to be a debate largely among this group that we're talking about, the unenrolled voters. They have a say in the direction of the state's policy and the state's Democratic politics, basically, because it's not just the primary that determines who wins. And so there is going to be a struggle within the party, just like we had in the presidential election, about how progressive is too progressive, if you will. And remember, Joe Biden won Massachusetts, even though we had the very progressive Senator Warren running for president at the time as well. Now, it was late in the game, and people, I think, thought that he was going likely to win, but he won significantly. And I think that may give us a sense of, you know, where the overall state might fall.
And Gary, what do you think are the issues that are going to drive people to the polls in 2022 here in the Commonwealth?
Well, obviously, we may still have COVID. How we have handled COVID over the next 6 to 10 months will determine where some people vote. I think the economy is going to be a big thing. We have this great, you know, we have inflation. We have this great resignation, as we say. I think that's going to really have an influence on how people think about their futures. And so there may be issues that we aren't necessarily attuned to now. So the post-COVID issues, I think, as people think about their futures, and the economy, as always, will be a primary issue.
So Lisa Kaczynski, sounds like you wanted to say something else. Go ahead and jump in.
I will add to that. Definitely COVID, economic recovery, education issues along with that, you know, are definitely something that we'll see. And climate, that's going to be a huge thing on the Democratic side. It has been in the past couple of cycles, increasingly so. And you're going to see a lot of attention on that. Really, I mean, as we showed that even in Boston and municipal level all the way on up from the state house, you know, up through the governor's race. And with that, transportation, a lot of these statewide candidates are going to, especially out in Western Massachusetts, are really fighting, you know, especially with these hardest hit communities with COVID. This is the opportunity. People are really taking to push longstanding inequities and try and rectify them.
So I want to stay with you for a second, Lisa. You made a reference earlier to Democratic State Senator Eric Lesser announcing that he is jumping into the lieutenant governor's race. A couple things I want to pick up on there, because that seems kind of interesting this year. The LG's race, you know, the Boston Globe just recently reporting this, has not been a big sought-after role. But there are a lot of interesting players at least kicking the idea around. What do you make of that?
Yeah, you know, kind of as I think that was Matt Stout in the Globe, you know, kind of as he was able to report there, this is a good way to raise your profile. And it's, you know, in a race where it's looking like things are going to favor the Democrats, maybe you don't quite have the profile yet to run for governor. Lieutenant governor is a great platform. And sure, it's a little bit of a, you know, there's not a lot of responsibility. It's a little bit of, at least constitutionally, it's kind of a make of it what you will sort of job beyond the governor's council. But, you know, people really do look to the lieutenant governors. I mean, Karen Polito is pretty beloved in some municipalities across, you know, across the Commonwealth. And this is a way to build up name recognition. If, you know, maybe you're getting stalled out at the, you know, in the Senate or the House, you want to take your politics and take your game to the next level and to try and help your constituents. This is a great platform to do that, raise your name recognition, maybe set yourself up for a governor run down the line, maybe set yourself up for something else on the national stage. This is a pretty, it's a little bit of a lower stakes way to, you know, get yourself out there.
And Gary, I think some people might assume that lieutenant governor just runs on a ticket with the governor, but that's not the case in Massachusetts.
70%.
So I think I may have lost Gary Daffin there, so we'll come back to him. Lisa, that's not the case in Massachusetts. They're separate races here.
They are separate races. They tend to eventually, you know, kind of come together and run as a ticket, like, you know, the Baker Polito, you know, became the ticket and everything like that. But yeah, no, they are separate races. They're going to have, you know, their own debates, their own issues, their own fields. You know, it's not like you're seeing, let's say, Maura Healey and Eric Lesser running as a team right now, or, you know, Sonia Chang Diaz and Kim Driscoll or something like that, who Kim is, you know, talking about potential in the current candidates right now. But yeah, so these are very different, but they are going to have to work together. It's going to be really interesting to watch, you know, the debates both within these individual races and, you know, kind of how things might connect depending on who emerges, you know, in the governor's and lieutenant governor's primaries.
So I think we're getting Gary back. Before I go back to him for one last question, let me just ask you, Lisa, to give us a rundown of the ballot questions that are coming. And I want to remind listeners, again, doesn't feel important now, but we almost all just got startled by an egg shortage, right? That almost happened here at the turn of the year because of a ballot question people voted on back in 2016 and forgot about. So what are the three questions that we can expect to see in November?
Yeah, that was a scramble. So right now, the biggest one, the one that has gotten the most attention so far, I'll start there, is the question about how to classify app-based drivers. That's your Uber, Lyft, I think like DoorDash and Instacart drivers. That's going to be by far the biggest fight that we're going to see. And again, there are four questions that have advanced kind of through the process so far out of it keeps getting cold with each cut. They now still have to go through the legislature, and there are a few other steps before they actually make the ballot. But there are two versions right now of this gig economy question, and it's basically classifying these drivers in terms of what benefits they will receive. That's basically what it affects. But this is going to be, you know, it sounds wonky and policy driven, but it's going to be a really expensive fight that can actually be one of those things that motivates people to the polls, because this a similar measure in California backed by Uber and Lyft was the most expensive ballot campaign in California's history, I think. So this is going to be a really big motivating fight this fall, should it make it to the ballot and, you know, through the remaining processes.
All right. Thanks for that. So Gary Daffin, I know we have you back. Last word to you. What is the thing you're watching for this year? Maybe a little off the beaten path. The people, it may not be on their radar screens.
You know, I can't think of anything that's way off the beaten path, but I believe that what I'm looking at is to see how the sort of embracing of progressive agenda is going to stick. I have this sinking feeling or a hunch that once we move down the road, particularly in Boston, of going after some of the more progressive agenda policy items, that we may have a bit of a backlash in Boston. And certainly if we try to move some of those issues across the state, I'm looking at, you know, how is the state overall going to embrace those and look at those and how that will impact how these races will end up in November.
All right. That is Gary Daffin, Executive Director of the Multicultural AIDS Coalition, as well as the co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Thanks, Gary.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And Lisa Kaczynski, a political reporter and author of the Massachusetts Playbook. Thanks to you too, Lisa. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much.